Welcome to 2019. I'm John St. Augustine. This is the first of the Life 2.0 podcast. 8 days into 2019. Glad to have you with me. Took a couple weeks off. Got to catch up, figure things out, go up the down staircase in the outdoor and check it and see what's going on this year, which is basically the same kind of crap that was going on last year, which is a very interesting phenomenon to me. I've never been one for making New Year's resolutions. I didn't make any this year. Probably won't make any at the end of next year. And that's just the way I've seen it, only because of perspective for me. I just think it's a setup. Listen, I was a personal trainer for 5 or 6 years with the Chicago Health Club chain way back in probably the late 80s into the early 90s, somewhere in there. Did a lot of training with athletes and people of name and note, and also people who walked in off the streets. And I found it so interesting, human behavior, when it comes to making these resolutions. And of course, all you have to do is track the commercials that are on television. You can see what's going on. It's all about Nutrisystem and Oprah's selling her weight loss stuff and all those kind of things. And this is the time of year to get ready. And anybody that's ever worked in the health club industry knows two things. One is, it's easy to start. It's even easier to quit. We are creatures of habit. If you don't change your habits, next thing you know, old Jed's a millionaire, or at least the health club industry is a millionaire. And the worst thing you can do is really start with a brand new slate in January and say, this is what I'm going to do, and start paying your gym dues. And you go 4, 5, 6 times, and then little by little, it kind of gets unraveled. And next thing you know, it's February, March, April. We used to make a joke at the health club that if everybody who actually bought a membership in December stayed longer than 90 days, there'd be no parking. And that's really, unfortunately, the sad deal. So I'm not big on making these resolutions and making huge changes. You can do that any day of the week. You don't need to wait till January 1st of whatever given year to do that. But now, on the other hand, I get that there's a mental thing about flipping the page and doing the old lang syne, and it's a new year, and you know, you got to kind of play games with yourself sometimes. So there is some merit to that. I just think you could do that today. You know, like at midnight tonight, I'm not going to do X, Y, and Z. So it is a constant readjustment, I think, of our perceptions and our perspective that really takes us as far as we can possibly go. And if I get one more email or see one more interview, especially at this time of year, because I've done some of this stuff, much to my chagrin at times, of it's a new year, it's a new you, and how do you do these things? And really, there's nothing new about changing your life. You just have to do old things over and over again until you get the result that you want. So I was watching it was like CBS Sunday Morning, or it was a local show, I don't even recall, doesn't matter. And there was a guy on there, I call them quote throwers. You know, they'll go out and throw quotes out, whether they're really their quotes or not, or somebody else's quotes, or even if they're accurate quotes, they're quote throwers. And it's a very short thing. And, you know, if you just work harder and not smarter, everything will be okay. Okay. But this guy threw out one of the oldest quotes in the book. And he said, if you fail to plan, you're planning to fail. Like, he made that up. He didn't make that up. However, here we are in 2019, and somebody needs to hear that. And you know, if you're not planning, you're failing. Well, life's not that cut and dried. So as we kind of have made our way through the holiday season and we're going into the new year, I think it's about doing old things, not new things. Because you already know, most people that I trained already knew they shouldn't do the things they were doing. That's why they came to see me. And my job at the time was not to be a guru to them, but rather be someone who could be a mentor and then turn loose. I wanted them to know the things that I knew when it came to working out and such like that back in the day, and that they didn't use me as a crutch, that they move forward. So on one hand, I had some great results with people because they really put the time, energy, and effort in to their training. And the health club managers didn't like it because they want to retain you as long as possible. They want to stick that umbilical cord right in your keister and drain as many funds as they can out of your bank account, so you'd stay, you know, working out and going with the trainers, and they get their percentage. Now, there's nothing wrong with good business, but I never found that to be the driving factor to me. So I wanted people to be a student and learn these things, and then go out and do yourself. And to this day, you know, I've talked about this before, and there's a lot on my mind, so you're going to have to bear with me for the next 9.5 hours while I get rid of this. To this day, when I go to the gym, I see probably 3/4 of the people doing movements that are not correct. I'm not going to say they're wrong, because there's little variations on everything, but they're doing basic movements incorrectly. And if you're going to do the basic movements incorrectly when you're at the gym, two things happen. You don't get the results you want, so you quit, because what happened? Nothing. You're gone. It didn't work out. Or you hurt yourself. And so life's a little bit like that, isn't it? If you're doing basic movements that aren't getting you the result you want, you tend to stop being interested and just kind of become apathetic. Or you're doing something and you get hurt, and then you have to figure out ways to get around that pain. So it's all kind of tied together for me when I do these shows, and everything is kind of in a cosmic cheese ball, and that's no joke, because I like me a good cheese ball. However, I think the cheese ball led to a nice case of the gout in my left foot. And if you haven't had that pain, I think this happened once about 5 years ago. And, you know, around the holidays, I break down too, shove all kind of stuff in I shouldn't eat, and it can't get out, so it backs up. And in my left toe, it was like somebody was taking a ball peen hammer and smashing the toe joint while at the same time firing up an acetylene torch and just running it up and down the inside of my foot. How's that for a nice narrative? Anyway, it's gotten a little bit better, and it's a reminder to me that I'm not as young as I used to be. A matter of fact, I thank you for all your texts and the messages and things. I turned 60 just a couple weeks ago, and again, it's just a number rolling over. It's a piece of paper, but it's also a number that's like, uh-oh, it's fourth quarter. I'm out of the third quarter now. 50s are done. The fabulous 50s are over, and now it's kind of getting serious. You know, I did a talk in Ontario 2 years ago, and it was a TED Talk, my second TED Talk up there. The first one was at NASA, to be clear. So I've done two TED Talks. One was NASA in 2009, and then in Ontario, Canada in 2017. And this concept of human math has been on me for years and years and years. And, you know, you can find it on YouTube. The talk's there. Just look it up, John St. Augustine, Human Math, TEDx, and you'll find it. And my concept was, or the theory that I was out to prove and push, was that we were all raised on linear numbers. You know, 12 times 12 is 144, and so everybody on the planet knows it. And we have a linear mindset and a linear way of learning, but life is not linear. So when we come into the difficulties of life, we don't know what to do with the numbers because they don't add up. And I was thinking about all the people that passed away in 2018, those of name and note, people like Stan Lee and Bill Daly, the actress. I mean, Stan Lee, are you kidding me? I watched the original Longest Yard yesterday. Burt Reynolds passed away in 2018. Charlotte Ray, the actress. And most of the time when people like that pass, we take even more notice because I think they live lives, maybe not that we want to have, but they live lives that it seems like they will live forever or something like that. It's kind of an anomaly, really. And yet, it doesn't work out that way. So as I hit 60, I realized that the average life expectancy in this country is 77 and a half. If that's true, I got 15 and a half years to go. That'll wake your ass up if it wasn't already awake. Well, it did to me in some ways. In other ways, it's like, oh, it's just a number, you know. And that's just the average. I mean, Stan Lee, he lived to be like 147, didn't he? Nah, he was 95. That's a pretty good run. So somewhere between 60 and 95, if I got 35 more years, what would I do with it? I'm not really sure. But this whole concept of linear versus cyclical is, I think, where we get in a lot of trouble. And numbers are easy to trip over. And so I started looking at going into 2019, I've already done 40. This is the 49th episode of the Life 2.0 podcast. It's something that, you know, I still struggle with a little bit. I'm a regular radio studio kind of guy. I've been that for a long time. But I got to tell you, there's some pieces of this podcasting that are very, very interesting to me. So I'm in the very clean and vaunted Life 2.0 studios. It's a gorgeous day here, which is going to lead me into my next topic in a second. And that I don't have a program director or a general manager over my shoulder going, well, you might not want to say this or that. Well, neither one of them have ever been on the radio. Or you might want to say this or go this direction, or, you know, you don't want to go too far that way. And at this point, too late. I mean, that's maybe somebody could have changed my gears about 20 years ago. But at this point, this is who I am, and this is what I talk about. And some of the things that float in, I think, are paramount in that moment. And sometimes I go back and listen to these shows and go, what was I thinking? However, this is what it is, and this is what podcasting is all about. And as far as segueing into other things, I went back and looked at the shows, the 49 episodes. I went back and looked at the episodes that I've already posted from the last year. At the end of December of 2018, I made all the shows free. Whether you're a subscriber or not, you could listen. And that's, you know, that's the bait. It's trying to get people to get behind this thing and plunk down $20 a month, which is what I spend, you know, at a drive-thru at Portillo's getting hot dogs. to have shows that inform, entertain, and inspire. It is a vast sea and a very challenging uphill climb. I was talking with Bill Curtis, who you've heard on this show before, and you know, from A&E. We were having a conversation off the air. I was driving back from a meeting, and he says, I don't know how you do it. He says, there's just so much information. And if you look at how this has blossomed, you know, from the first time somebody fired up a radio, which was a miracle machine back in the day, to television, and then to AM, and then to FM, and then to satellite and cable, and it's so much. And so on one hand, I'm frustrated that there's 300 million people in this country. Finding 1,000 or 1,500 subscribers shouldn't be that difficult. Go figure. On the other hand, I am thrilled about having people that do find value in this work, and they do subscribe, and we have some new ones coming on board, so thank you so much for that. But back to these episodes, I'm trying to come up with a pattern, an algorithm, I think they call it in some places. And I noticed a couple things. Of course, free shows get bombarded. If I did a Freebie Friday, you know, it was off to the races. You know, people are downloading and listening because it's free. I get it. When I would do the Wednesday rant and it was not free to only subscribers, I'd get very few people downloading. So there was that. When I hammered on the current president a couple times, even though they were free shows, I got less traction. Guess what? Sometimes you just got to call it the way you see it. And then the biggest shows, of course, were the interviews. John Barry was fantastic at the end of the year. I caught up with him on his tour bus right outside of the city of Chicago in the Woodfield parking lot at the mall out there. And great conversation with my buddy. And it was huge. You know, like 150 people downloaded it within like 2 hours. And in podcast terms, you know, there's no hard and fast rule for this. There's no, if you hit X, it means Y. There's none of that. So if I have four people that listen to the previous episode, and then John Barry's on 150 people, that to me, that's like huge. But it's all constantly moving. So there was that. The biggest show last year, which is a little bit of a surprise to me, John Barry came in at 150, and over 200 people logged in to hear my tribute to my late great friend John Denver. And I had some pieces of old tape and some interviews I had done and stuff like that. So that was big. And then you start looking at the other interviews. You know, I pulled up a Darius Rucker interview from when I was at Oprah Radio 10 years ago and put that on, and Charles Osgood and Christopher Reeves was a big one. So I got to try and find the place where this all fits. On the other hand, I don't want to just do interviews so people listen. There's value in that for sure. I want to mix them in. That's the way to do it. But there are just some things going on that I got to call it the way I see it. Otherwise, I should be on the entertainment channel. And I don't want to do that entirely. There's nothing wrong with it, but I don't think swimming in the shallow end is exactly where I, you know, cut my chops at. So what I'm getting at is that this stuff's going to be a mix and match going forward. You're going to hear interviews. I got some lined up already that I think are really, really important. Matter of fact, the one I did with Christian Piccolini last year, unbelievable stuff. This is a guy who used to be one of the top-ranking skinheads in the country and now travels the world getting people out of that life. You know what kind of courage that takes? And that's the underlying current of this show and everything I've ever done on radio is that. Taking action, transforming from who you used to be to something else, and then taking action on that, making that work for you instead of against you. That's what it's all about. And so we have this current climate. Remember I said the word climate. We have this current climate of this fake news stuff going on, which I find nearly fascinating, except that it's been going on for a long time. I mean, in World War II, they came up with all these inflatable tanks and stuff and had a whole, you know, battalion of fake war machines, and they fooled Hitler. I mean, that's, you know, so we got fake stuff going on now. They had fake stuff going on then. So it's sometimes very difficult for people to discern what fake news is and what it isn't. So I actually started a Facebook page called the Real News Network, because I got tired of watching people that were smart, that I knew were smart, falling for this stuff without checking it out. So I don't know where this comes in me, where I need to be the Barney Fife of the frickin' planet, but I'm like, nip it in the bud. We got to nip it in the bud, because we're better than this. We're smarter than this. At least we should be. So I did this little page on Facebook, and all of a sudden I got people sending me stories going, is this true or not? Now, on one hand, I'm appreciative they send them to me. On the other hand, go look it up yourself. That's the whole idea. So it's just been an interesting outing as this stuff kind of picks up steam on its own. And I mentioned to you the word climate, because we're in a climate that fake news somehow passes as real news. And all it takes is one guy, you know, bloviating, speculating, and verbally defecating, and a segment of society believes it no matter what the facts are. Fascinating human behavior, debilitating, but fascinating. And so today, I went out and fed the birds this morning with no shoes on, in shorts, in Chicago, on January 8th. Yesterday, I could have done the same thing. It was 53 degrees, beautiful sunny day. It's like spring. I'm thinking, maybe I need to go cut the grass. It's January 8th, 2019. There's no snow on the ground. There hasn't been snow on the ground for about a month and a half. We've had a little rain the other day, something like that, maybe, you know, here and there. But if you looked out the window now, you'd say, well, it's time to start planting bulbs. So the reason I bring this up, and to point out what the difference is between real news and fake news, or if we're going to start using leverage points when it comes to perspective on really important things, Donald Trump has this ongoing problem that he confuses weather with climate change. They are not the same thing. But in that vein, so here's a perfect example. So back in November of last year, the president got on and was, you know, doing this whole tweeting thing. And he got on there and he said, brutal extended cold blast could shatter all records. Whatever happened to global warming? This was on 22nd of November of last year. So just like a month and a half ago, not very long ago. So he texted, brutal and extended cold blast could shatter all records. Whatever happened to global warming? Which means you're confusing local weather with the whole globe that's making change. But if we're going to use that as an example and say, oh, it's brutal and cold in November. What happened to global warming? Well, here we are a month and a half later when it should be a hell of a lot colder with a shitload of snow on the ground in Chicago, and I could go put the pool up in the yard if I felt like it. You see, that's how it works. You have to come back with something that has some sense. So if you're going to use one day and say, oh, look, it's snowing in Appleton, Wisconsin, and it's only October. What happened here? What's going on? Then we got to roll forward and say, look, well, now it's January. We should be knee-deep in snow. And we're not. And so I find the climate thing just fascinating. And we are the only creatures on the planet that soil our own bed and then suffocate in our own waste and go, what's going on here? And I've often used the ozone hole as a leverage point or a push-off point. When that was discovered in the late 70s and early 80s, they figured out the chlorofluorocarbons, CFCs, which were the ingredients and propellants, their chemicals, we're actually going up from all the refrigerants and air conditioners and aerosol sprays and eating away, literally eating away the sunscreen of the planet, the stuff that keeps us from burning alive, right? There's this thin layer, the ozone layer. You can't see it, but it's there. Scientists can see it because they're smart and they go figure this stuff out. And then one scientist came back and said, hey, there's a hole. There's not supposed to be a hole. We need to close the hole. So eventually, CFCs were banned. The Montreal Protocol was signed, and everybody agreed we're not going to use these chlorofluorocarbons anymore because they're eating a hole in the protective layer of the planet. Try that now. Try tomorrow going, there's a big hole. You can't see it, but we got to fix it. It wouldn't get off the ground. It'd be fake news. Fox News would be all, it'd be fake news. And that's dangerous to me because if you can't figure that stuff out at a lower level, that means the higher up the stakes go, the stupider we get. Now that's, of course, is a blanket statement. It obviously isn't everybody that falls into this category, but that's enough. And on the other hand, this has all been a really huge, what I want to say, learning experience because this isn't even about politics. It's about human behavior. There's nothing really new here on some level. This stuff kind of goes back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And so as we roll into this new year, we have some serious wake-up calls coming. And I am a reluctant, what's the word I want to look for here? I am a reluctant what? I'm a reluctant point man. I don't like talking about politics because it's a diversion. I don't like talking about Democrat, Republican, or other because I've never seen it on a headstone. I think it's all bullshit. However, human behavior that has squeezed through different political arenas and realms and shoots and files has to be identified. And at this particular time, what's going on with the GOP, a party that I used to not have a problem with at all and spent time with myself and voted through, has turned me into someone who just you know, I can't believe it. And so as I sit here, and Theodore Roosevelt's picture is about 3 feet off my desk here, I was watching the movie Lincoln by Steven Spielberg, and I was thinking about how difficult things were back then. And if you think politics are bad now, go watch that movie. I know it's probably not 100% historically accurate, but we've been kicking each other's ass over stuff for years, and that wasn't that long ago. So it, in some ways, I'm not surprised we're still doing this stuff to each other, because, you know, it takes a while from like the soil to cleanse itself after years and years of stuff getting passed down. So in some ways, we're doing pretty good. And in other ways, we could be doing so much better, especially when it comes to climate change and all that goes on with the planet. So I would rather just be doing interviews and talking to, you know, celebrities and, or, you know, maybe just sports for 5 hours a day and, you know, stuff that really doesn't change anything. However, I feel like there's a responsibility that comes with this microphone. There's a responsibility that comes with the experiences that I've had. And to find some sort of higher ground in this stuff, no matter how low it seems, how much flooding we have to put up with. So as we move forward in 2019, I was thinking about this article that I saw. Oh, golly gee willikers. It was in the Tribune, Chicago Tribune. Wait a minute. Chicago Tribune's business guide. This is from January 2nd, 2019. And here's my notes. How to be kinder in 2019. And this is by Wanda Thibodeau. And let me, before I get into this, just say this has nothing to do with the writer or the research or what was put together. I find some of this fascinating, like we don't know this already. But this is, if you want to be kinder and have a gentler 2019, here's what you're supposed to do. And the tag underneath it is, bosses can make a difference with a few simple acts and words. So follow me on this. Kindness is the glue that makes people stick with a great leader. Unless you're building a wall. It's what allows people to let down their guard, to trust you and connect with you for both better work and higher quality of life. That's what makes committing to compassion one of the most meaningful resolutions you can make. Here are several ways to show kindness to your team members in the new year. Now, just imagine this before I read this list off, and I'm using the current president as an example, not the last president, not the president before him, or the one before him, or the one before him, which is what people do. Well, so-and-so did this. Doesn't matter. There's where we're at today. So can you imagine if these are the traits of a great leader, Donald Trump doing any one of these things? Monday morning comes rolling around. Bring them coffee or cupcakes. Extend a deadline whenever possible when stress escalates. Check in regularly to see how they're doing rather than just a project update. Share an inspiring book or quote. Offer genuine praise or thanks, especially when they least expect it. Ask what they need. Leave your phone off or out of reach when you're with them. You know, like don't text at 3 o'clock in the morning that climate change is a hoax by the Chinese. Okay. Donate your raise towards employee training, bonuses, or pay increases. Or reevaluate your benefits package to better meet immediate needs. So, like, don't create a government shutdown. Okay. Be realistic about quotas and the circumstances workers try to reach. Set the bar high, but don't let numbers give a false impression of the employee's experience or ability. Hold open doors for other people. Tell a brief story that demonstrates empathy. Be honest about your own mistakes. And let them know it's okay to make mistakes too. Be human. Ask them about the good that happened in their day. Be more generous and flexible with breaks. Donate some vacation time. Discourage gossip about someone who may be having a bad time. Order supplies before they run out. Help for a few minutes of one of their projects, especially if they have to stay late. Invite them to take a walk or grab lunch or do another activity with you, like, you know, around the Rose Garden at the Oval Office. Make it easier for them to work remotely, especially in emergencies. Mentor or give unsolicited support, no strings attached. Leave private notes of encouragement on their desks. Can you imagine if these are the traits of what a great leader needs to be doing? Donald Trump walking around through the offices of the White House going, here's a note for you. Read it. Reply to emails quickly. Listen to moments of anxiety or depression with an open mind. Put interesting books and fun games in the break room. Apologize as soon as possible if you're wrong and change your behavior to prove that you're sincere. Again, these are traits of a great leader. How to be kinder in 2019. Make sure all your employees get training. Send them home early or surprise them with a random call to take the day off. I think a lot of people that work for President Trump did get a random call to take the rest of their life off. Share positive feedback with their direct manager. If it isn't you, ideally in writing. Ask for their insights so they know you value their opinion and expertise. Hold the elevator door open when they're going in. Make sure they get away from their desk for lunch. Tape money to the vending machine. Keep a bowl of healthy snacks or fruit in the busy office areas. Let them go ahead of you in the cafeteria, stairs, or etc. Talk about what they do for you, not what their title is. And finally, this is the big hook. If you want a kinder, gentler, better 2019, and you're in a leadership capability and you're in a position of leadership, this is what you need to do. Say thank you. Now look, I'm throwing a little spin on here because I find the president's behavior one flew of the cuckoo's nest. However, there is value in these things. But here's my point. My mom used to tell me this stuff. My grandmother did, my dad, the guy down the street. Whatever happened to us? What happened to us that we have forgotten that common sense can get us through uncommon times? I don't know what happened. I think there's a lot of technology that's gotten in the way. We've been very, very distracted. We have so many choices. I go to get some bologna, which I shouldn't eat, but I do on occasion. And they'll say, how thin do you like it sliced? Just cut it like a piece of bologna. I don't know. Like Oscar Mayer cut. I was having a chat with the guy at the deli, and he says, do you want it thin, thin? What? Thin, thin? What's thin, thin? You could read the newspaper through it. That's thin. I agree with that. But we live in a day and age where there's so many choices, I think we forgot how to choose anything. It's just overwhelm, overwhelm, overwhelm. So everything I read on that list is common sense, but not common practice. As I mentioned earlier, I was a trainer for 5.5, 6 years, somewhere in that area, back in the day with Chicago Health Clubs. I loved it. I thought watching people literally physically transform before my eyes by putting in the energy effort that it takes to do that, not only changed their body, but it changed two other things, their mind and their spirit, because they're all tied together. That's the motto of the YMCA. I'm not singing the song, I'd have to pay for it. So it's mind, body, and spirit all connected. Doing those things on an ongoing basis is good. And I think a lot of people already do it. I hold a door for someone, they looked a little surprised, but I was taught that when I was a kid. I don't think we need a 9-week refresher course on how to hold a door open. Do you need a life coach to figure that out? So as we go into 2019, I'm reminding myself that there are a lot of opportunities ahead for us because we see where the holes are at. And here's what I mean by that. And I've pounded this in the ground for a very long time. If there's something that's pissing you off, do something about it. Then you'd be less pissed off. You know, the veterans thing, as a veteran myself, I see some of the things that fall through the cracks. I also see the amazing work they do there, which doesn't get a headline. I see them take care of people every day, every time I'm in there, which isn't very often. And I'm thinking, that's not a headline. How they talk to that man wasn't a headline. How they help this person along, that doesn't make a headline. But if files get lost or somebody dies, which are horrible things, those are the things that make headlines. But lifelines are more important than headlines. And all that's going on now in our country, all the headlines with the crap in them, underneath all that stuff, there are lifelines for you and I to make a difference and not worry about what the politicians are doing so much. We have zero control over what they're going to do. The elections have come and gone. Things have shifted in the balance of power a little bit. And let them take care of that. Otherwise, you're just beating your teeth together. And we can take shots. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, I'm going to be doing it here as well. But I'm also very cognizant of the fact that if all I do is talk and not walk, then I'm just doing half the work. So if there's something that's pressing on you, then you should be working on it. And then it's less pressing on you. I'm going to be doing I'm going to be doing a week live on Chicago Radio on WCPT 820 AM. As we get closer to the date, I'll give you some more reminders. It'll be on Facebook and things like that, and Twitter. I'm going to sit in for a week on January 28th, that whole week, from 2 to 5 p.m. Central Time. And I'm looking forward to doing live radio, which isn't something I've done for quite a while. It's always a different energy for me, phone calls, what have you. But as I was listening to the show that was on, I don't know, about a week ago, and trying to get a read on how they run their show clock, where the breaks are and stuff like that. There was a conversation about homelessness. And it's a valid conversation. And so many times I kept hearing, we're not doing anything about it. We need to do more. We need to do more. And I'm thinking, who's the we in this? Who's the we in this? Is it me? Well, if it's me, then it's not we. And so this conversation went back and forth. They had callers in and talking about mental illness. For sure, that's a part of this. And, you know, lack of services, and that might be a part of this. But this whole thing, like there was this giant hole in the ground. And the only way to fill it was by passing a law or something. And that's not the only way to fill it. If you're walking down the street in the city of Chicago and you see a homeless person, which is not a rare occasion, and you want to give them a dollar or a sandwich or a handshake, then you are part of the solution. You're not going, somebody needs to pass a law so this man can eat. Do something. And it was reminding me, and I may do a show on this when I get on the Chicago end of things, that as this all was going on about homelessness, I was thinking about the high school that I attended, Schurz High School in Chicago. And over the last few years, we've been doing this yearly event called the Bulldog Bash because we're Bulldogs and that's what we freaking do. And we raise money for various Schurz activities at the school. These are kids that'll never meet us, but so what? Now what? And one of the things is that we found out a few years ago there were over 70 homeless kids, students, at Schurz. When I went there in the early 70s, mid-70s, there was no such thing. And I was appalled at that. I was stunned. It didn't register. And the two guys I work with, they were just, we all graduated about the same time. We could not believe that there was a kid at our high school who didn't have some sort of a traditional home to go to. Now, they're not all living on the street. Some of them are living in a van. Some are living at a friend's house. You know, they are not connected to a stable home environment. So they are labeled students living in temporary situations, STLS kids. They don't call them homeless. And so we decided, instead of going sitting back and going, oh my God, the mayor of Chicago should fix this. Or how come CPS doesn't do something about it? Well, they have. They allotted X amount of dollars because they don't have any money anyway to try and work this off. Turns out there's over 18,000 STLS kids in the Chicago school system. 18,000. I had a hard enough time graduating and studying with a stable home life. I can't imagine what it's like to go live at somebody's else's house, sleep on a couch, and then go to try and finish high school. So we decided to swing into action. Action with a capital A. And at the last Bulldog Bash, we raised a bunch of money, I don't know, like $4,000. We bought a bunch of totes for them with essentials and things. We're supporting it. And we made a difference doing that. We're not here to pat ourselves on the back. But this is an example of going, here's a problem. How do I engage in that so I can help take the pressure off whatever that is? So if the veteran stuff bothers you, go to the veteran's home and sit with someone who needs, you know, 5 minutes of your time. If you know, the homeless thing bothers you, go to a homeless shelter and volunteer. We have become a nation in so many ways, thinking that talking is the same as action. It's not the same thing. And so one of the points I try to drive home in this podcast every time I do it is there's something you can do to make things better. Don't just sit back and go, look at this, woulda, coulda, shoulda, how bad things are. I don't need to swim in the news. It's pretty much the same as it was the day before. I'm not going to spend, you know, my last 15 and a half years watching CNN for 6 hours. But there are things that we can be engaged in that help the process change a little bit. You may not get a headline out of it, but you'll definitely create a lifeline. Here's Earth Matters with Bill Curtis.
It's the center of our solar system, a star so bright you can't look at it with the naked eye. And it's 109 times bigger than the Earth we live on. The single most important aspect of life on Earth is the sunlight that creates all the other systems that allow us to survive. With a surface temperature of 10 million degrees, it takes just about 8 minutes for the sun's rays to illuminate the Earth. Solar power has been around since the 1980s, but more and more science and technology is finding ways to harness this immense power. Solar-powered cars have gone coast to coast. Solar panels on homes reduce or eliminate the need for conventional energy. And even watches are powered by the sun. If we play our cards right, sunshine on our shoulders can make us all very happy. I'm Bill Curtis with Earth Matters.
I got to tell you what, I am so looking forward to to this week on the air in Chicago, because I'm going to be stuffing those Earth Matters. They aired on that same channel for 3 years, so I get a chance to get on. We're going to have Bill as a guest and kind of talk at things from a very common sense perspective. This audience is a bit slanted. They're probably all on board with the things that I talk about. I still like to come in. I don't want to debate climate change with anything because it doesn't change anything. I just like to sit down and ask a few questions, and I'm pretty good at that. The next thing you know, people start unwrapping why they feel the way that they feel, and it kind of becomes a revelation to them. So I'm not here to be right about anything. I'm not even not here to be happy about anything. But what I am going to tell you is that when you change the way you look at things, as my old pal, the late, great Dr. Wayne Dyer said, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. And the only person I think ever really appreciates change is a wet baby. The rest of us hate it. So we're asking a whole lot of all the humans on the planet to kind of get their shit in one sock and say, let's start being a little kinder to each other. What was that saying? Hold the elevator door open, get some coffee and cupcakes, and the world will be a better place. And you can do that. You need permission? Is that what you're waiting for? Good. Permission granted. I grant you permission to be a better human being. Bring coffee and donuts and cupcakes and hold the elevator door and pass out thank you notes, and everybody will be better for it. And then even if the shit's hitting the fan, maybe you're not in front of the fan. You'll be behind the fan where there's not as much shit flying back. Here's what I want to finish up with. I got a kind of an interesting lesson the last few days. I am a reluctant participant in technology like a lot of people. Facebook, I think I've been doing it since probably middle of 09, somewhere in there. I really didn't understand the concept. I'm like, why would people sit here and do this? And then it becomes something that is a necessity if you're in some sort of business as I am, whether it's books or speaking engagements or podcasting. And so, you know, I put up Sacred Sunday Songs for 8 years. I have a whole page dedicated to that on Sunday morning. And I got the Real News Network thing going, and I got Earth Matters going. I got 4 pages. I had a profile page of myself. I had the personal page and the professional page and all these pages laying around. On January 3rd, I decided that I would start out and change my password on Facebook. And that was the last time I was able to log in via laptop on Facebook. I can't tell you what happened. I have no idea. I went and checked on my passwords file on my computer, my trusty, dusty Dell laptop, and it's there. It's the right one. Doesn't work. So I go into panic mode. What the hell? You know, it's not going to fix itself. Like, if I leave it for an hour, it'll be okay? No. So this goes back and forth and back and forth, and I have some support. Oddly enough, I'm still logged in on my phone, so I can reach that page. It's very difficult to navigate. So after 8 years, I finally didn't do a Sacred Sunday Songs. I was no way to really sit there and do all that I usually do in any way that was efficient. So I skipped it. And I kind of like, well, that was, you know, I've been doing that 8 years every Sunday morning. I'm up 4, 5, 6 in the morning, have all the songs laid out. It was like a show. Didn't do it. About 100 people jumped on my page, you know, where are you at? And we're sorry. And some people put up songs and we'll do it for you. So it was all great. And it was fine. I didn't die and it was fine. I woke up the next day. However, I'm starting to figure out there's something else going on here, and I can't figure it out. And I kind of take a little bit of pride in being able to, quote, fix stuff if it's broke. Some things better than others. And I got a Facebook message that had a phone number. And the phone number was what I thought was support somehow connected to Facebook. So I made a phone call, and I got on hold a couple times. And about 7 o'clock, 2 nights after this whole thing happened with getting locked out, I got a phone call from a guy named Jim. I don't know if it's his real name. And I was on the phone with Jim for about 4 hours. And Jim was going to fix everything. And he showed me that hackers had gotten into my account. They were all in Canada. And he started pulling stuff here and there. And I get caught up in all this. And I'm all of a sudden, he's got remote access to the computer. We're working. I'm watching him do this stuff. I got an eye on everything. And we're going through all this stuff. About an hour and a half in, he says, so if you want to continue, it'll be $249 for a year, $350 for this. We'll give you a break if you do it for a lifetime for $500. I'm like, wait, what? What is this? And all of a sudden, things shifted. And so we worked for about another hour and a half, but that was a turning point. And so I locked the thing down, and I created another Facebook page. So if you're listening to this podcast and you see two of me somewhere, I'm still running both of them. One of them is going to stop at some point. However, this whole new other Facebook page was created so I could at least gain some entry. And this guy had me convinced, and he may be right, I don't know, because I'm not a hacker expert, that I'd been hacked about 40 times from Canada. The bastards up there get me. And I don't know if they were from Canada or not. So this all went on till 11 o'clock at night. And my brain's fried. I just want to log in to Facebook like I've been doing for 8 years. I change the password about every 6-8 months. And this is the first time something went haywire. I go to bed at 11. I wake up at 3 a.m. in a cold sweat. What did I do? I let this guy into my computer. Even though I was watching it, I'm watching files and stuff. Actually, at one point I jumped off and he called me. I came back. I'm thinking, I might have let a hacker right into my computer. So for all the stuff I talk about in the world that I think's going on when people are acting stupid, I guess I got to be one of them this time. I thought, what? Wait, what? I got so caught up in trying to fix something, I wasn't paying attention. And so I got up at 3 o'clock in the morning. And from 3 o'clock to about 7:30 or 8, I drank coffee and removed everything that he had put on, everything I could find. You know, I enough computer savvy to pull things off and to clean stuff up. And I changed all my passwords and still couldn't get out of Facebook. And then I went online and I put his phone number in on Google. And he's listed, or at least this company he's connected to, is listed as this low-level hacking. Like, they don't really take your materials or your information. What they do is try to hook you into this $300, you know, payment for their work, when they really probably didn't do anything. They're just hooking you into it. So that was the last nerve on my tooth. And I called the guy the next morning. And I give him credit for sticking on the phone. So either he was too scared to hang up immediately or he was trying to play it out. But I blew him out of his shorts pretty good. And I was really mad at myself more than him. He's just hacking. And I'm not saying he is. I shouldn't, you know, I have no evidence. I haven't lost any money. I don't feel compromised in any way, shape, or form. I felt more stupid. And I told this guy, you know, if you're going to run a business, and the first thing you need to tell people is this, we're not connected to Facebook. When you go to their website, it looks just like they are. And for all the real news stuff, the digging that I've done, I should have done that beforehand. There's my huge lesson. And so blasted this guy out. Finally, we take your stuff out of the files. I said, I know where you live. I know your phone number. And if I find one thing at my computer that's not the way it's supposed to be, now I'm coming for you. I'm sending the Marine Corps. I'm sending the United States Coast Guard because I'm a veteran and that's what we would do. We'd all get on your ass. I'm sending the FBI, the CIA, the state police. By the time I was done, it was Dragnet. And then he hung up the phone. It's a rough weekend, but a lot of lessons in that. So yesterday, I had a little glitch with the blue screen of death because of some other things. I was able to work out of that. So I think I'm fairly calmed down from all that, back up and running, and things are kind of leveling out a little bit. And at this point, the other part was this. Maybe it's time. It was good to take a little break from Facebook because it's, you know, the internet landfill. It's too easy to dive in there every day and get stuck in there and communicate that way. So that was good. Take a little break. And maybe it's time for a different page. So I got 1,600 people that have to find me again. What's the big deal? And we'll see where all that stuff goes. So a lot of lessons in technology. And you know, I'm sitting here. I have this piece of paper right next to me here. All my passwords are on there. On a piece of paper. There's no technology but a Ticonderoga number 2 pencil and a piece of paper. I mean, I always talk about growing up when Amazon was just a river. I prefer it that way. Password was a TV game show. Now it's just a freaking game. So in all of this, as I try to calm down a little bit here, as I wind this up, I want to thank you all for sticking with me these 49 episodes of Life 2.0 podcast. We'll see where all this goes. I've had notes from some of you that are listening to this free 2019 version that, you know, you want to come on board and your finances are starting to allow it. Listen, I get it. I try to liken this to what I was mentioning before about working out. There's a lot of ways you could spend your money or invest your money. And I look at this not as something that you spend money on, but that you invest in. Just like a gym membership. So I spend $35 a month. It's open 24 hours a day. I can go in at 4 o'clock in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. Doesn't matter. I get a little keep fob. That's what this podcast is like. If you're a subscriber, you can go in at any time of the day or night, click in as a subscriber and listen to what I did. And hopefully there's an investment in there for you. That the return on your $20 per month is worth me jawing 4 to 6 times a month and that you find value in that. And so when I go to the gym, I'm in there to keep my machine together. You know, my body, I'm in there to keep that machine going the best way that I can. Gout notwithstanding, I still went yesterday. But this is no different to me. This is like a gym membership for the mind and the spirit. You'll have to do the body stuff somewhere else. And if you can look at it that way, I think you're going to find a lot of value in this. So sometimes I'm just going to rant like I kind of did today. And there's some fantastic interviews coming up and some other things that are going to be going on. So I hope that you will stick around for all that kind of stuff. Anyway, Happy New Year, 8 days in. I hope that you have safe travels. And until next time, adios.